evening sends long shadows down the face of Beenagee. The cloak of darkness gently flows o'er valley, hill and lea. I sit here in my kitchen neat as time goes ticking on. I think about the rambling nights all filled with talk and song. But do I hear some distant talk along the Smirla shore? Yes, there's some friend, some mocker, and wild Dromadamoor. I hear below the haggard, the glasher singing sweet. Don't mind the wind and rain outside, come in and take a seat. You're welcome, friends and neighbours, draw in and sit you there. The tilly lamp is lighting in your company we share. Pull up the sugon chairs around the blazing open fire. 'Tis burning well that turf we shlawned last summer here in Lyre. And by its side we'll sit and let the conversation flow about the happenings of the day and the times of long ago. Then touch the strings and let it rise, the music we admire, and take us back to how it was in the peatlands round Lyre.
Yeah, there you go. That was the voice of the now sadly departed Mihála Mórthyrtig of Dún Sin, Os Comhairle. In 1998, Mihál unveiled the Dan Paddy Andy Memorial in Lyre, and 10 years later, he came along to officially open the festival. Joe Harrington of Lyre Compán, good morning to you.
Hi, Jerry. That's an old recording. It still held well, all right, didn't it? Brings a tear to the eye, actually, when you hear it now after all the years.
Yeah, and certainly, and like it captured, I suppose, the resonance of his voice, his ability as a communicator and a broadcaster, just magical stuff.
Yeah, it was. We asked him to do it. It was the official unveiling of the memorial to Dan Paddy Andy O'Sullivan. He'd be the best known person out of Lyre Compán, and he came down no problem at all, was delighted to do so. And he stood with John B, who had written a lot about Dan Paddy, and with Jimmy Sullivan, who had come home from America from Rockaway. Jimmy was the son, and is still to the good, the son of Dan Paddy Andy, and he made a lovely speech as well. And he connected in with, he was well able to do that sort of thing. He had done his research and he connected in well with things in the community. The speech was made in the race course, what we call the race course. Nobody ever remembers horses running in Roach's race course, but that's what it's always known as and still is. And
yeah,
that's where the memorial is. And he remembered some good few years before, where 1,000 people turned up to a football match there that was played between two sides in Lyre Compán, and Niall Sheehy, the great Niall Sheehy, was out at it, and it was played for the Healy Cup, which is a cup that has gone missing. We've been trying to trace it ever since, but nobody knows where it went to. But he included all that in his speech as well, so it went down well with about 1,000 people, I think. There wouldn't have been maybe about 500 people that were at the official unveiling. It was a big turnout, and he was the master of ceremonies, and so well able.
Yeah, and he gave his time, and I've been hearing stories since yesterday, since the news broke around 12:30 of his passing at the age of 93. He gave hugely of his time to lots of different people and lots of walks of life and lots of different events as well, especially here in Kerry, Joe.
Yeah, well, I mean, Lyre Compán doesn't have a village yet, just a townland, but he saw fit to answer our call, and, well, as always with Mihál, there was no charge, and the other thing, a couple of other things that happened when he was out here, just to note, like he always had the couple of fuckle in whatever he's saying. He was talking to the locals, and some of them actually responded, asked Gael get him, and he was very surprised, and he was delighted to hear how that happened, which was the simple fact that back in the 40s, a kinsman of his own, Padraig O'Sullivan from Dingle, was actually the teacher in Laird School and taught everything through Irish. And people had still, in their later life, remembered a lot of Irish because of that. He was delighted with that. Another thing that happened as well, that really sticks in my memory, and that was 10 years later, as you said, he came back to officially open the festival that had developed since the previous time he was there, and he came back to officially open it. We used to have different people at that time coming along to officially open the festival. It gave a bit of publicity to it, but we were up at Rainagone Cross where Dan Petty had his dance hall just by chance that afternoon, and we were doing a video of a guy singing a local song. We were making a video of the festival, and we had a guy singing a local song there and a guy playing the accordion, and who pulled up on me, Halla Murray Hertig, hopped out of his car, came over, and when he saw what was going on, he beckoned to Kay O'Leary, our secretary, and who had been the person who had come up with the idea of the memorial 10 years before, and he beckoned to the accordion player to play a waltz, and himself and Kay O'Leary. We have a video someplace of it. They danced on the side of the old dance hall, and we have it on video. A lovely memory as well.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely amazing, really. Joe, look, he'll be for a myriad of reasons, he'll be sadly missed. He was an amazing person, an amazing personality, I suppose, as well, and you know, someone who the whole county was proud of.
That's for sure. Kerry will remember him. Ireland will remember him. Sure, he was the voice of the GAA, and he made, I think as well, he made the Irish language that bit more attractive and popular. Yeah. In the way that he intertwined it in his commentaries and so on, and he made things okay to say. So I think he did very good work there, and he'll be remembered in Kerry, of course, very much so, and he'll definitely be remembered in Laird Campagne.
Yeah, he certainly will. Joe, listen, thanks a million for sending us that clip and giving us the chance to play it this morning of Micheál, and also for talking to us this morning about that. That's Joe Harrington there of Laird Campagne. We want your memories this morning of Micheál O'Murtagh, the man and the commentator who for many decades, down through the years, as Joe said, became the voice of the GAA of Saturday and Sunday afternoons, really, in this country during the summers when you couldn't make the match yourself and you were listening to Munster hurling finals and All-Ireland hurling finals and football finals in Croke Park. He certainly was a voice which, I suppose, as one listener said, or one person said yesterday, decorated the summers of our childhood and our lives, really, with those commentaries. In a moment, we're going to be hearing from Tony Lean, sports editor at the Irish Examiner, and Michaela Sullivan, of course, former All-Ireland winning captain with Kerry, who knew Micheál for many years. But first, we'll have a little listen to what the man was very famous for.
50-yard out from the Dublin goal, on the right-hand side of the field, Maurice Fitzgerald kicking it, dropping it in toward the goal, dropping it in, and magnificent point by Maurice Fitzgerald. A left-footed kick from Kieran McDonald. It comes off the upline. A chance for Kevin O'Neill. And another goal for Mayo by Kevin O'Neill, who started it all 90 yards down the field. He had it again. And he scored a goal. He has scored a goal. Then started the move. 90 from the goal. Passed the ball. Ran like hell. Collected and drove to the net. The champions 2-5 into this game. We hope you're enjoying it. It's one of the biggest days in the Irish sporting life and the cultural life of Ireland. The free is to be taken out by Mike Frank Russell. Colin Goose Cooper waiting for the ball. He's got a lovely pass away from Declan O'Sullivan. A chance here, Kieran Donny. Declan O'Sullivan and a goal for the Kingdom. The ball is out. Well past the centre of the field. Shane Ryan jumps up and breaks the ball down to Kevin Bonner of Dublin. A low tasty kick out to the 45, and it's held now by Cummings. A chance of a goal, and he's got it. Tomas Massey from Dublin, and he made man the way. Westmeath man who played Westmeath Hurling on his way from Mullingar to Beijing. He's reached Tibet, chucks it out to Shane Ryan. And they're going the first half in the ball. Nobody got it into the hand yet. Picked up by Gerry O'Connor. And the first test of Henley of the centre back, John Tennyson. And he's now engaged in a shouldering match. And that's a foolish thing for a man that was getting treatment for the shoulder all the week. Pressure as he pucked the ball out the field. And there to pick it up is Henry Shepherd. Henry Shepherd inside the 45 from out the wing. What a majestic run. John O'Connor down toward the goal. Locked inside by Dearman. Held inside again. Struck it by Aidan Fogarty. And it's a goal from Kilkenny by Aidan Fogarty there. He snapped it up. And now it's 1-7 to Kilkenny and 7 points to come. As I said, we have listeners all over the world, and we've listeners at home as well. And one is Nelly O'Connor from Blarney, 95 years of age. She attended the Thunder and Lightning final of 1939. Billy O'Dwyer, he gets it out to John Gardner. Gardner is 50. Cork hadn't finished yet. Cork hadn't had it. Tried to get inside. Gives it out to Niall McCarthy. McCarthy slipped. He gets up. Two Kilkenny men at the shoulder. He's gone inside them. He gets a crossing ball. Ben Lohan. And it's
Finney Bateman, a Westmeath man. He's trying to cycle from Mullingar. It's Mullingar to Beijing. He's gone halfway. He's now into Uzbekistan, I'm told. It's a long, long time since 1277, since Marco Polo left Venice to go. I don't think he had a bike to go to the same Beijing. The problem is, he didn't get back for 20 years. The Mullingar man will be back sooner.
Yeah, there you go. That's just a flavour of the decades of commentary of Micheál Ormertig in Croke Park, in Simple Stadium, in Thurles, in Fitzgerald Stadium, and places right around the country for many years. With me on the line to talk about him as a man and a legacy and a friend is Micheál O'Sullivan and also Tony Lean, who is the sports editor with the Irish Examiner. Micheál, I'll start with you. Look, our thoughts are with his family this morning. At 93 years of age, he'll be, even though he lived a long and rich life, he'll be a big loss to the family and his friends.
Well, first, Johnny, first of all, I'd like to express my sincere sympathy to Helena and the rest of the family on his sad passing. Listening to his voice there was magic. He could portray about the players, about the people that were listening, people all over the world, and he could come in and out of the game so fluently. But he made an enormous contribution to Gaelic games and also the Irish language. He brought a great respect to the Gaelic games commentary, to the players. In fact, I would have been involved with him. In fact, people may not know, but for 30 years, 70s, 80s and 90s, Micheál trained all the Dublin-based Kerry players, those who were going to college or those who were working in Dublin, for over 30 years, which was an enormous contribution.
Yeah.
And people may not be aware of that. The contribution he made to Kerry football was enormous.
Yeah, he put the time in, put the effort in, and he was able to work with Mick O'Dwyer and tell him how fellas were going in training, I suppose.
Yes, and interesting, when I was manager, I used to ring him every night how training went in Dublin, but he would never, ever make a negative comment about a player. If he was playing poorly or training poorly, he would always see the plus. He was so positive in everything he did.
Yeah, he was, absolutely. And that was part of his philosophy of life, to look forward. He always looked forward to matches, always looked forward to games, always looked forward to every day, he said once in an interview here when we were asking him about his secret to a long life. And it stood him well, Mickey.
Yes, but he had a great outlook in life. And he was always there to help. He helped clubs, communities all over the country in their fundraising for local for local facilities. He was just amazing. He was always on the phone, ready to travel wherever he was needed.
Yeah, he certainly
was.
He was
president of the Colosh Dísagon Past Pupils Union, and had looked forward to next September to a big reunion in Ballyvonie with all the past students. Unfortunately, you won't be able to make it.
Yeah,
be there,
yeah, amazing. Stay on the line, Mickey, with Tony Lean of the Irish Examiner with us as well. And Tony, look, just listening to that commentary there of him, I mean, your thoughts this morning on the passing of, I suppose, a genius broadcaster, really, when you brought it all down to what he was amazing at doing, at painting that picture for people who couldn't be at the game.
I think, Jerry, he is the commentator kind of by which all other commentators subsequently now are measured. And I mean, and when you speak of benchmarks, I mean, he is the very highest benchmark in terms of what he did and his profession. And like, his style of commentary actually wasn't just aped, you know, by younger people trying to do the same thing. It actually became almost an act of itself. People actually tried to impersonate it, and even people who were impersonating were able to entertain others with the flow of language, as Mickey Ned said, the beautiful grasp of Irish, the cadence of how he spoke. You know, I mean, that little series of clips that you just played there just reminded you again, I think, Micheál Amara Hertig, when people talk about his radio commentaries, I think what he did, Jerry, over anything, and I don't know of any other commentator across any sport, across any country who has done so, is he popularised the idea of turning down the volume on the television and turning up the volume on the radio to actually have the radio commentary with the TV coverage. I genuinely can't think of any other commentator who achieved that. People actually felt more engrossed, they felt more involved, they were more entertained. He had this remarkable ability because, as I think, as Nicky Ned said, and I think other people have said over the last couple of days, one of the recurring themes, Jerry, I have heard about Micheál is what a people person he was. He was never negative, he always found the positive, and because of that, he was trusted hugely by players, not just Kerry players, inter-county players, and he must have been one of the few commentators or journalists that I know that was able to freely walk into a dressing room an hour before an All-Ireland final and was welcomed in a dressing room an hour before an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, so he had that level of respect from everyone involved.
He absolutely, and actually I was talking to Dara Kennedy yesterday and he told me one fascinating story. I mean, the thing about Micheál Amara Hertig is, and we're speaking this morning obviously on Radio Kerry, and everybody understands how proud he was of his Kerryness and his West Kerryness, but you never ever got a sense of bias from his commentaries when Kerry were playing. And Kennedy was saying to me yesterday, before the 1998 All-Ireland semi-final, and if you remember, Mick O'Dwyer was in charge of Kildare, Kerry were playing Kildare, Paddy was in charge, Micheál Amara Hertig was in the Kerry dressing room and knew at that stage that Kildare's Niall Buckley was out of the game. But Kinnaird said he never told anyone in the Kerry dressing room. And that kind of information would have been very useful in the Kerry dressing room an hour before the game. But O'Mara Hertig's professionalism came before his native pride, and Kerry weren't told.
Yeah, it was amazing, really amazing. The president in his tribute yesterday, Tony, said that Micheál turned every match into an epic tale, his commentaries capturing like no other the sense of occasion, and he kind of did. His voice, it was a sense of urgency to every moment without overdoing it. He had this amazing ability to transmit what was going on in the field, and obviously, and sometimes in some of the games wouldn't have been great, he made them greater. I don't know how he did it.
I think we will find over the next number of months and maybe even years, I mean, many arms of the GAA, many arms of the association will pay their own special tribute to Micheál Amara Hertig. I would imagine, Jerry, that the Munster Council surely should be one of the organisations who would do something particularly special for Micheál Amara Hertig, because he absolutely brought Munster hurling finals just to a different plateau. He made them, as you say, even some that weren't a classic, he actually made them into something you know, mythical almost, you know, when you were listening to them. And again, we were chatting about this yesterday. It just shows the man's flexibility, that he's from Kerry, he's born into the GAA, you know, as Mickey Ned was reminding there, like, you know, he actually was training Kerry footballers. But to a huge number of people across the 32 counties, he would be more remembered for hurling commentaries, and particularly Munster hurling final commentaries. I mean, even in those clips you were talking about there, you know, he just had this remarkable ability. And I obviously was lucky enough to be in hundreds of press boxes alongside him. And he was so animated with the microphone in his hand. It was almost as if he was playing. There was always beads of sweat rolling down the side of his face during commentary. You know, he just got... He had this ability, a remarkable ability when you think about it, to actually stay independent, stay aloof, but to be so emotionally involved in what he was describing. And that's why, as I said, when it came to a Munster final Sunday, I don't know how many thousands of people around the country decided, turn down the TV volume, turn up Radio 1, because Omara Hertig will just make it an occasion that we will all remember.
Yeah, yeah. And Mickey Ned, a key element of it as well, especially in the earlier years of his commentary, for many decades, he was 61 years at it, took over from Micheál O'Hare in 1985, and the main commentary, even though he was doing it for many years before that. The link with the diaspora as well. He was the voice of Ireland for them, connecting them to their sport for many years.
Yes, because when people are abroad, this was the one link they had. And he never forgot them. Like in the clip we heard there, he was talking about somebody abroad in the middle of the excitement. He would always come back to the exact same spot in the match. He had this ability to digress about people or places, but would always get back to the point where he left. And he understood the importance of Gaelic games abroad. And but also he played an enormous role in the growth of the Gael Scolana. He was on the Cundran and Gaelge, and he helped to expand Gael Scola all over the country. And speaking to him regularly, this was one of his great sense of achievement. The amount of Gael Scolanas that were now distributed all over the country, and he can take a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, he certainly, and he just, that way of interweaving the language, the two languages, in one seamlessly, like you said, at a time when it wasn't as popular, popularizing the element was a key service he did for the Irish language making in this country.
Yes, and of course he loved the Irish language, and as you say, he could go seamlessly. He'd be speaking to you, he'd be talking in Irish, he'd speak in English, back seamlessly into the Irish again, and he had such a wonderful brogue for the Irish language. It was just a pleasure to listen to him.
Yeah, certainly was. Gentlemen, listen, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for giving us your time this morning to remember and pay tribute to the great Micheál O'Hurtig, that's Mickey Ned O'Sullivan, and also Tony Lean. And you'll see brilliant pieces in the Irish Examiner today. Micheál O'Hurtig is on the front of every newspaper in this country, and rightly so. This morning's brilliant picture of him in front of the Irish Examiner, and great coverage in their editorial and their sports section as well. 4 pages of coverage there. It's a brilliant picture of him overlooking, I think it's Semple Stadium in Thurles, and it's just of him, a cup of tea beside him, getting ready for a commentary, which is what he spent 61 years doing. And lots of tributes right across the newspapers from all sorts of different organisations, all sorts of different groups, not just the GEA, this morning, paying tributes to a man who lived a very long, a very fruitful life that coloured in so many of the pictures we had in our mind of games that we couldn't get to or weren't at over those 61 years. And our thoughts are with all of his friends in Kerry this morning, the people of Dunsheen and of Dingle. We'll be talking more about Micheál O'Moherty, hearing more of him on the programme this morning. We want your memories as well. And we'll get to more on Kerry today after we take these.
Kerry. Hare is running for the first semi-final of the Derry Mirror Diamond Derby. Drood's Jono, the dog that all the crowds came to own. He's out at number six, forging to the front, jointly owned by Patsy Borden of Doohan, His Royal Highness Prince Edward. Running on the rail, stretching it out, going towards the line. There's going to be a royal dog in the final of the Derry Mirror Diamond Derby. Drood's Jono over the line, first and a very popular winner here. I'm sitting between two very privileged people, joint owners of Druids Jono, Patsy Borden from Doohan, His Royal Highness Prince Edward. I think, Prince, your reaction to that great run by the favourite.
Well, it was great. No, it was great. It was well worth coming here and to see that. It was great. The last time I saw him race was a few weeks ago, and it always amazes me just the speed with which he comes out of the trap.
Was Patsy keeping you up to date in how the dog was progressing and all that?
Absolutely, and it was very nice to be here, and it's great to see the dog in such good form.
Of course, winning a derby is not new to the royal family.
Well, it all depends. I mean, my father won it in 1968, so it would be nice. It would be nice to think if we could try and do it again.
But Patsy Borden tells me this is a far superior dog to the dog your father had in 1968, Chimera Flash. Would you have a comment on that?
No, because I don't remember that.
I see.
We'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. That's Micheál O'Moherty interviewing Prince Edward after the 1990 English Greyhound Derby semi-final. The race favourite, Druids Jono, owned by the late Patsy Byrne there of Doohan, partnership with Prince Edward. And Micheál O'Moherty called him Prince. Technically, you're meant to call him Your Royal Highness, but I don't think Prince Edward is too upset. I think he really enjoyed the interview. But there you go. Prince Edward certainly warmed to his manner, that's for sure. Druids Jono would eventually finish as runner-up to Slippy Joe in the final. But yeah. Amazing stuff. Micheál O'Moherty there, one of those moments that will live long in the memory. With me on the line to talk a bit more now and talk about the man, as a West Kerry man and a Dingle man and a Dunsheen man, is the Cathaoirleach of Kerry County Council, Brandon Fitzgerald. Brandon, good morning to you, and our condolences to the people of Dingle and Dingle GAA Club on the loss of Micheál yesterday.
Thank you, Jerry, and could I just, on my own behalf, on behalf of the club and on behalf of Kerry County Council also, just wish Helena, Micheál's wife, and his family all our sympathies. They've lost a husband, a father, an uncle, a friend, and he'll be sorely missed. His like won't be seen again. Just listening to that interview there, with the Prince, and Micheál had just a unique way about him. He was a Lake Ragale, Lake Kiri, Lake Corcoguina, Lake Ailtucht, Lake Dangany Cush, but first and foremost he was a Lake Dunsheen, where he came from, just a couple of miles outside of Dingle Town, just overlooking the Shirock there and the Short Strand by Kinnaird. So the club and all I think Dingle people, West Kerry people, Kerry people, it's sadness, but then say kind of in a little bit of a way, it's a happiness that we actually were able to hear and appreciate what Micheál did for our games. He kind of, geez, he made them into magical encounters, Jerry. I'm sure if the two of us were lining out in a football pitch or a hurling pitch, and if Micheál O'Moherty was doing commentary, we'd probably be the two best players on the pitch. He kind of made that. He made that. He brought it to life. He painted that picture, and he put it into song in a way. Somebody said it to me yesterday. He spoke English like the Irish language is spoken. There's a song to it. There's a rhythm to it. And as well, it wasn't about Micheál. it was about the game, it was about the players. I've heard it even say some players, he always asked the players, how was mom, how was their dad, do you know, how was the family, how were they all in Dwarr, how were they all in Ballyfert, or how were they all in Ventry or Dvoir, do you know, it was about that. And in a way they knew that they would, do you know, I just saw an interview with Sean O'Gahalpin, and he said, like, you know, that he never put in his opinion, or he never kind of spoke bad about a player. He maybe said that a player had a better day, you know, but he never kind of brought in his own opinions or anything. It was just that he knew these players were amateur, that they were going out for the love of their club, for the love of their parish, trying to do their mom and dad's proud. And I think Michal really understood what the GAA is all about, because he summed it up in all those, you know, matches and everything. And then, like McKean Ed was saying there, and Tony Lean, you know, everybody used to listen then to see who would be the person that Michal would remember out in Malaysia or South Africa or someplace like that.
Yeah, that story of connecting people together, and the people listening from all over the world as well as listening in Ireland. He'd mention him, right, he'd pepper his commentaries with those, and that it kind of brought the sense of community of the GAA together. And he was meticulous as well in his planning. You could tell from his commentary he'd been working all week on the game, researching, writing things down, paying attention to what was happening with players' injuries, and just doing the work of a consummate professional. And that showed every Saturday or Sunday.
Absolutely, like something like that doesn't just happen. One of Michal's family used to always be with him, assisting him and helping him, keeping the scores, or keeping track of who's coming on, who's going off, different things like that. But as you said, Jerry, like he would prepare, and then he'd go down, I think, always to greet the teams and the managers coming in to the dressing rooms, and he'd have a quick chat, and he'd always put, I suppose, a kind of a good, you know, best wishes to the players. And like, you know, somebody was saying, like, when we were growing up, like, there wasn't an awful lot of our games on the TV, football or hurling.
It might be
a semi-final or a final, but like, you'd be listening to, geez, I always remember like the Dingle races, and Dunsheen is just around the corner from the Ballintaggart, and like, you'd have the horses running around Heartbreak Hill and Ballintaggart, and next minute the microphone or the speakers would have Michal Murhurtig doing Kerry in a quarter final in Crow Park or something like that. And you know what, you'd nearly be thinking Michal was going to win the Dingle Derby, you know, because he was giving it so much, and so much passion, like and always like that. He just loved being in Dingle as well.
I did. I remember one of the moments for me when I was thinking yesterday about him, when I heard the news, was I was driving somewhere, and it was a Sunday afternoon, there was a Munster hurling final on, and you had the radio on to keep in touch with what was going on. It was the dying minutes of it. It was, sides were level, and in full flow at transmitting the drama of it, he said, like the man at the Dingle races said to me a few weeks ago, anything could happen now, you know. And it was just transmitting those two sporting moments, the drama of a race in Dingle and a drama of a race to win a Munster hurling championship.
Absolutely. The Moriarty is synonymous with Dingle, Dunsheen, the Dingle races, and just knowing the whole family, that they are such a good family, and such a happy and proud family of what Michal has achieved. They will miss him so much. But like Michal, I think wherever our games, wherever football, wherever Schlitter is being pucked about by a group of young fellas or young girls, Michal will always be remembered, because I think that is what Michal made it, you know. He made a Kerry voice, the West Kerry voice accent. You know, he made it okay. You know, everybody, like, straight away, like, where are you from? Kerry, Michal Murhurtig, Jack O'Shea, you know, Paddy Shea. You know, this is what they kind of remember, like, kind of, and you know, he was just so, he never tried to change anything. He was just the way he was all the time. Like, I remember actually when we were very lucky. the club Parkinos was selected for one of those kind of little TV promos with Jeff Stelling and Chris Kamara.
Michal came down
it's maybe 5 years ago, excellent. He was showing them how to do a commentary, and it was the Dingle under 16s, I think, and the Ungaeltacht under 16s were playing a game, and Michal started doing the commentary live over the park in Osig, and you could actually physically see the players from both sides, Dingle and the Gaeltacht, getting taller, getting stronger. Their kicks, there was no wide, everything was going over the bar because Michal was doing the commentary, and he knew every single one of them, or he knew their brother or sister or mom or dad or family, and he was including this in the commentary, and the players, like, you know, were they were in Go Park, you know, was making them the, it was just so unreal actually to see it. So as you said, Jerry, magical stuff, but not easily done. You have to do the homework, and you have to put in the time, and it was never about Michal, it was always about the game and the players, you know. So of course he'll be sorely missed here, but I'm sure, look, while there's a football to be kicked and a schlitter to be pucked, he'll always be remembered, and we thank him for what he actually brought us. All those games, just his wit, his humour, the magic, and like every Mickey Ned said there about the Irish language, like he never forced it on anybody. He just spoke it, and he was just so proud to have it. And the thing about it is, as I said, he spoke the English language like you would be speaking Irish. There's a music to it, and our games are what makes us part of the Gael, the Irishness. And when you hear Michal Mahertig's voice describing it,
of it,
you know,
it is. Thanks so much for talking to us this morning and speaking so well about him and why he was so important to Dingle and to Kerry and the country. That's Brondán Fitzgerald there, the Cathaoirleach of Kerry County Council, paying tribute to the late Michal Mahertig. Brondán, also PRO for Dingle GAA as well. Jerry, God rest Michal Mahertig. What a lovely, truly lovely gentleman he was. It's still hard to believe that Michael O'Regan is no longer with us. I loved his weekly comments on politics, so informative, witty. Two of the greats gone from the airwaves there, missed so much, as Catherine O'Hearn in Ballylongford. Mary says, Jerry, I'm thinking of all the relatives abroad who would be so sad at hearing of Michal Mahertig's passing. He was so loved by the sporting diaspora across the world. Stella says, Jerry, please play his piece done with Liam O'Connor during a football intro. My pure magical memory of him, sympathy to all his family. And Jimmy says, Jerry, just a little rant you might check out. Says, I know you've been on before about hedges and trees along by Mountain Stage, which at this stage have nearly one of the nicest views in Ireland, completely obliterated. One day I was passing last week, I saw a couple from a camper van standing on their picnic table trying to take in the view. About 1 kilometre on the Carrasaveen side of this viewing area at the viaduct, which was a subject of major roadworks for the past of last year, and also this year now, is a very dangerous black spot due to trees not being cut back. As you know, the road bridge at the viaduct is only wide enough to take one-way traffic, and you have to yield the traffic already on the bridge. With the height of the trees, you cannot now see what's approaching if there is oncoming traffic on the bridge. I know this is not a Kerry County Council problem, as I think the National Roads Authority are supposed to look at it, but with the majority of traffic on this time of year being tourists, it's a bad accident waiting to happen. Jimmy, getting in touch with us on that. What I think what's meant to happen is, if things are deemed to be an inhibitor to viewing on the road, they're meant to be cut back no matter what time of year it is, Jimmy. But thanks for highlighting that for us in the programme. If anyone has got a view, get in touch. Hi Jerry, I met Michal at the Radio Kerry Outside broadcast from Kelly's Landis in Milltown in 2016, says Patrick. Absolute gentleman. Donal contacted the show and says this morning that just, he says himself, at his tuppence worth, way back in the 1950s, he remembers hearing an Oireachtas final competition between Clare and Wexford, and Michal Mahertig was doing maybe one of his first broadcasts. Even then, there was something about his style that just drew you into listening to the game. I think his first match was Shortly after he went to Dublin, it was in 1949, a Railway Cup match. There was auditions held among students at UCD. I think he was doing an arts degree at the time, and he used to go to Crow Park, and his first ever game commentary was a Railway Cup match in Crow Park in 1949. Railway Cup was much bigger back in those days. And a listener says, having had the privilege of being one of the Kerry gang trained by Micheál Mórthartaigh in Belfield in UCD in the late 1970s, I never heard him say a negative word about any player, including the opposition to Kerry. At the height of the Kerry-Dublin rivalry in the 70s, he never uttered a negative word about Dublin, says this listener. And that comes in from Sean De Bruin, Associate Professor, Fireys and Mary Immaculate College, Nemo Le Cal, Novella. Talik on Erlar, and that comes in from Sean De Bruin. Thanks very much for that, Sean. We have actually Sean on the line now. Sean, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Jerry.
Thanks for joining us on the programme this morning. Tell me about those training sessions.
Yeah, at the time in Dublin, there was some of the Kerry players were in Dublin, and I was in Belfield at the time playing with UCD, so we weren't on the panel. Obviously, just he needed a gang together, so Micheál trained all the Kerry gang, but they were joined by other people as well, like those people had Jack O'Shea there, Charlie Nelligan was there at the time, and you had Henry Gavin of Mayo, you had Mikey Connor from Castle Island. There's a lot of players who Micheál trained there, and really it was, when you see the training of today, it was quite different to that. It was really football all the way with Micheál, and it really was entertainment, and we really enjoyed the time with Micheál. And the one thing, I suppose, I never spoke a word in English to Micheál Mórthartaigh, because Gaelic is my first love, and Micheál, I think he never put anybody ill at ease with the Irish language, and that's the one big legacy he leaves, a positive attitude towards the language and sport. But everything he did in life, he loved people. Absolutely, and that was the adrenaline that fed Micheál Mórthartaigh. And in later years, I saw my wife, who was principal of North School Reach in Limerick, had invited him down to present medals to the Harty Cup team. Many members of the current senior Limerick team, like Cian Lynch and Declan Hannan, all of those. And at 12 o'clock at night, they offered him accommodation in the Woodlands Hotel, wouldn't have it, sat into his car and drove back, and he was in his late 80s at this stage. So he had phenomenal interest in life, in people, and sport, and his positive attitude, I think, was one of the main attributes that stands out about Micheál Mórthartaigh in my memories of him.
Yeah, and he was obviously sport was huge. He was intertwining his love of it, obviously, with his profession after many decades of teaching in Dublin. And he looked forward all the time, and that was a positive. And that's 93 years of a life doing that, which is a great testament to him.
Absolutely, and even as you mentioned that, looking forward, even if a player played poorly and somebody said to Micheál, oh, such and such didn't play well today, oh, he said, oh, wait, he'll probably play better the next day. He never looked back, he always looked forward, and he always had the positive word. I think that's what really sustained him across life, and he had a tremendous interest in people and in places and in names, and he had a phenomenal memory. And I suppose it's like anything in life, if you really enjoy what you're doing, it really isn't work, and what Micheál did wasn't work, and he often mentioned that. He said it was an absolute pleasure to do what he was doing and to have met so many people. And I think he did that right across. It wasn't confined to Kerry or Dublin. From the smallest club in the smallest county in Ireland, he had the equal respect for everybody. I think that really is the outstanding memory I have of Micheál.
Yeah, indeed. Sean, listen, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. But thanks a million for getting in touch and talking about your memories of the man.
Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Sean.